We're halfway through 2024, and the elections taking place across the globe this year will set the course for the later half of the decade. Political landscapes are shifting, and the outcomes in four contests could shape our collective future. What are these critical elections and their potential impact on the world stage? Join us on a special edition of VOA's Issues in the News. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Miller. Well, both Lori London and myself are out this week, but we wanted to share with you an interview I did last year that provides some insights on the days, months, and perhaps years ahead. Russia, India, the European Parliament have already had their elections this year, and the United States is scheduled to do so in just a few months. The votes that have been cast could potentially steer the course of nations and the interconnected world. Adriano Bossini is RAIN's Director of Analysis, a risk intelligence company that provides access to critical insights, analysis, and supports businesses. I spoke to him last fall over WhatsApp before any of the 2024 elections took place, which is why the statements are forward-looking. I guess where I want to begin is that you identified four different, I don't want to say countries because the EU's in there, but you know, four different elections taking place in 2024 that you say can help shape or will shape the latter half of this decade. And I guess where I want to begin is before we get into the nuances of those four elections, you know, what do you see as the overall importance of these elections in terms of driving policy, driving international relations, and driving the interactions that people have around the globe?
Yeah, we are talking about four of the largest economies in the world and four of the most impactful countries in the global arena. We are talking about, of course, the United States, the European Union, India, and Russia. We are talking about a population of roughly 2.3 billion people, a GDP of approximately $42 trillion. We are talking about countries that are willing to be active players on global affairs. And yes, it is a coincidence that the four of them are holding elections in 2024. And I want to be clear about this. We are
Ukraine
a bit generous when we talk about Russia
year,
as an election, because
Russia,
we all know that it's not a proper election. And we know that Mr. Putin or someone he chooses will be elected with almost no real opposition. But it also fits the pattern of four big territories making leadership choices in 2024.
What do you see as potential outcomes or impact of the Russia taking a look at the 2024 elections in Russia, there's some concern whether or not they'll be free and fair with either Russian President Vladimir Putin obtaining re-election or perhaps a designate winning the election in his stead. What do you see as the potential impact for that election having on the world stage? Significance.
These territories, these countries are vastly different. Of course, we cannot really compare Russia, which is not a democracy, with the United States, which is a democracy. We cannot compare the European Union, which is a bloc of 27 countries with their own governments that appoint supranational leaders, to India, which is a monster of an election that will take place over 2 months. But they do have a common feature, which is that nationalist populism will play a significant role in all of them. This is an ideology that is often very difficult to explain or to classify. But broadly speaking, this is an ideology that tends to promote a strong sense of patriotism. It presents other countries as enemies. It pursues protectionist trade policies. It criticizes globalization. These are all leaders leaders that tend to polarize their own domestic societies along ideological, ethnic, or cultural lines. They, in many cases, they threaten the rights of minorities. They promote traditional cultural and social values. Many of them also tend to centralize power and to limit institutional checks on their authority while questioning the credibility of media outlets and restricting freedom of expression. Of course, each case is different. I am not saying that the four territories that I am talking about here are exactly the same and the same things happen in each of them. There are nuances, there are different degrees to which this happens. But broadly speaking, nationalist populism will play a significant role in all of these elections.
You know, going somewhat in reverse order, I wanted to touch base on Russia first, because as you mentioned, you know, Western analysts and election observers in general do not believe that elections in Russia, the Russian Federation, will be free and fair, and that either President Putin will be reelected or, as you mentioned, his designate will be serving in that role. So, you know, aside from the population of the Federation and its ongoing war with Ukraine, you know, what do you specifically see as the importance of that outcome?
Yeah, so as you said, this is not going to be a free or competitive election. Putin or somebody of his choice will win with little to no real opposition. But the interesting thing about what will happen next year is that the political process will be operating at a time when the social and economic impacts of the war in Ukraine are starting to be fully felt. There will be a big issue, which is whether or not Russia has to call for a widespread mobilization, as they need extra men to continue the war efforts in Ukraine. This would be an extraordinarily unpopular thing for Putin to do, even in the context of an autocracy with little to no real opposition. It would be very unpopular. So this will probably, almost certainly, I would say, not happen before the election, but the chances of mobilization happening after the election will increase because there is no end in sight for the war in Ukraine. But perhaps more importantly for the future of global affairs, the election will not alter Moscow's assertive nationalism and its push to defend Russia's role as a global power. Quite the opposite. The election will have very strong nationalist, patriotic overtones with a very strong message that we are fighting for the motherland and they are protecting ourselves against our many, many enemies around the world, which means that the chances of the Kremlin ending its invasion of Ukraine are extremely low. And so are the chances of a ceasefire with Ukraine, let alone a peace treaty, which we don't see in the foreseeable future.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for that, because I think that paints a very clear picture on what is looking to take form in Russia and the Russian Federation. Moving southerly to India, I wanted to ask you about India. You mentioned the incredible expansive process that India goes through when it has an election and the populist movement there. We're looking at a possible name change in English to the state, moving away from India, which is, some have expressed a name of colonization going back to Bharat. You know, what do you see as potential, risks for the world, given that Narendra Modi, the Prime Minister of India, has maintained somewhat close ties with Vladimir Putin in Russia?
Yeah, it's Modi's two administrations have been full of contrasts, right? Because on the one hand, he's actively trying to promote India as a manufacturing hub, to encourage foreign investments. He's trying to improve the country's digital infrastructure. He's trying to expand internet connectivity. He's undertaking a massive tax reform to streamline the taxation system and regulatory reforms to promote entrepreneurship. So on that side, there's real change happening in India. But at the same time, he is doing all of this while also promoting a strong nationalist rhetoric with a particular focus on Hindu culture, which is creating lots of problems domestically, because as people know, India is an incredibly ethnically, religiously, and linguistically diverse country. So this is leading tensions, especially with the large Muslim minorities in the country. But India's nationalism is also having an impact on foreign affairs.
How so?
India is one of those emerging middle powers that are questioning the West and the international institutions that were established after World War II. He is cooperating with the likes of Russia, which you just mentioned, and China on the creation of alternative institutions. All three of these countries are members of the BRICS, which, by the way, only a few weeks ago invited other countries, which shows that they want to expand. They want to deepen cooperation, especially with what is called the Global South. They are also trying to fight against the supremacy of the US dollar as the global currency. We know that all these projects and all these ideas face massive challenges. None of this is going to happen immediately. But India is one of those countries where you see this active push by middle powers to challenge the global order that was built over the past 6 or 7 decades.
You're listening to VOA's Issues in the News. I'm Steve Miller, and we're speaking with Adriano Bossoni, RAIN's Director of Analysis. Moving to the European Union, you know, there have been populist movements within individual countries, you know, the French, you know, right, the Italian right, various countries, and have had parties try to take control of their respective legislative bodies, rise to the rank of prime minister or president. Other countries like Hungary and Viktor Orban, you know, more conservative and far reaching right movements, has taken the highest office there. Now, with the European Union election that's coming up in the, you know, the summer months of next year, 2024, you know, what do you see as, you know, carryover elements to those populist movements within the nations affecting the larger bloc, which is now 27 countries, as you mentioned, after, you know, the United Kingdom exited not too long ago?
Yeah, exactly. As you said, the European Parliament election is a very strange beast because you have 27 countries voting to appoint the members of a supranational entity, which is supposed to legislate on behalf of the 27 countries. But most of the time, the elections don't really happen on supranational terms. When people are voting, it's most of the time they are keeping an eye on domestic politics. And EU Parliament elections are often used to reward or punish the local government. So even though they are supposed to be about supranational issues, EU federalism, EU integration, EU policies, most of the time people vote thinking about domestic politics. And what is happening in domestic politics is that the nationalist right is quite strong these days. They are in power in places like Italy, Hungary, Poland. They are quite popular in places like France, like Germany, where actually the far right is polling at extraordinarily high levels, which is quite problematic in a country like Germany with all of its history, right? So this is a point in European politics where the nationalist right is quite popular. And opinion polls suggest that because of this, the nationalist right will perform quite strongly in the EU Parliament elections. To be fair here, opinion polls also suggest that the mainstream center-right and center-left, if they get together in a coalition, if they reach a deal, they will be able to keep control of parliament. So if polls are to be trusted, the center-right and the center-left will lose ground, but not to the point where they lose control of the parliament. But the irony, though, is that while the far-right rises, it's stealing votes, or at least it's happening at the same time as the Greens are actually going down.
Just let me step in for 1 minute. And for those who may not be aware, Greens typically are a reference to environmental parties within politics, especially within Europe. And I'm also glad that you clarified about the tie-in or the appearance of stealing votes or votes going down, because while the two events appear to be happening at the same time, correlation does not mean causation, and the two events may not be inherently related to one another. So sorry to step in like that, but please continue.
Which to me is symptomatic of a fascinating process that is taking place in Europe right now, which is some degree of fatigue with environmental policies. There are many people in many parts of Europe that think, perceive that the energy transition is happening too fast, that the energy transition is posing, it's imposing extraordinarily high economic costs on companies and on households, and that Europe needs to take a breath from the very fast push against climate change. We see this, for instance, in a country like the Netherlands, where an agrarian political party is polling super strongly ahead of general elections next month. And you would say a highly developed country like the Netherlands, with a very important services sector, with a very important manufacturing sector, it's quite unusual to have an agrarian, a farmer's party actually polling so strongly. The thing is, there's a lot of people, especially in European farms, that are operating on very, very narrow margins, and they are dealing with very strong pressure from the European Commission to modernize, upgrade their equipment or their procedures to comply with EU legislation. And then you have places like Spain, where there was a massive drought this summer. And while the common wisdom would say, yes, this is a confirmation that climate change actually exists and that climate change is a thing that needs to be addressed, the far right in Spain is using this as an example of Spain needing to come up with its own environmental policy, and Spain should stop following the misguided directions from unelected technocrats in Brussels, right? So the message that the far right in Spain likes to promote is that Spanish solutions for Spanish problems. And if we need to get water from water reservoirs to help our agricultural producers, we will give our farmers that water, even if the European Union says those reservoirs need to be protected. So this is a fascinating development, in my opinion, and one that will play a significant role in the EU Parliament elections next year.
I'm Steve Miller, and this is VOA's Issues in the News. We're speaking with Adriano Bossoni of Rain Corporation. Finally, let's talk about U.S. elections. I mean, that's coming up in November of 2024. Currently, it looks like to be a repeat of the 2020 election, with Joe Biden on the Democratic ticket, the incumbent U.S. president, against the former president, Donald Trump, on the Republican ticket. But, you know, the highest office in the land kind of sets the policy, and the nuts and bolts of the country organization falls down to Congress and the House of Representatives, as well as the Senate. And currently, you know, both parties have narrow majorities on either house. So passing legislation to try and move the president's agenda forward is somewhat difficult. So, you know, given the state of American politics, you know, what do you see as the key challenges for other countries in trying to plan out how they want to interact with the United States come 2025?
Yeah, even though it's going to be a very close election, and an election that could, depending on the results, produce a divided government where the executive branch is in the hands of one party and Congress is in the hands of a different party, there are a few things that we know will happen, right? It's obvious to me that the rivalry with China will continue regardless of who wins the election. as would the use of tariffs and quotas against foreign goods to protect American manufacturing. We need to keep in mind that while this was heavily disruptive under former President Trump, this is a policy that, for the most part, continued under President Biden. And so, of course, under a new Republican administration, these policies may become more aggressive and broader. But even if the Democrats are in power, there will be continuity in the competition, technological, political, geopolitical competition against China, and also in some of the tools that the United States uses to fight this war against China.
As you mentioned, you know, the Biden administration has carried on some of the Trump administration's policies with China, even though of late there have been a number of high-level cabinet members and other U.S. officials visiting China to try to smooth over relations and rebuild ties. But we don't know who's going to win the 2024 contest.
Of course, depending on who becomes president, we could have a more erratic or contradictory or unpredictable policy. We know that there was a lot of that under the Trump administration. We know that nationalist leaders tend to be less predictable. But I think that other issues like the war in Ukraine, for instance, could be impacted by the outcome of the election. Some, I have to be fair about this, some, not all, the Republican candidates currently participating in the primaries suggest that the U.S. should weaken or in some cases even stop their military and financial support for Ukraine. And this is something that some politicians in Europe are saying as well. So if we have a configuration, this alignment of points of view in the United States and in Europe starting in 2024 and especially in 2025, Ukraine may be put to a corner. Ukraine may find itself in a situation where it has little choice but to reach some kind of settlement in with Russia, because it will simply run out of money, weapons, and men to fight the war. So this is something that could impact 2025, maybe 2026.
And we should say that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and other members of his government have repeatedly said that there will be no concessions to Russia to end the war. And during the week of the United Nations General Assembly, additional aid has been announced to help Ukraine in its defense.
And then there's one final event that I think will also be crucial for U.S. foreign policy, which is the events in Taiwan. Taiwan is going to hold an election early next year, in which, if polls are correct, the nationalist candidate who has a very anti-China rhetoric and pro-Taiwanese independence rhetoric is expected to win. And we know that China has been very anxious about this election. There have been several military drills in recent months because of the tensions created by the election. So if the nationalist anti-China candidate wins in Taiwan, this will test America's resolve in protecting the island. It will also test Taiwan's partners and America's partners, from Japan to South Korea, which will have to have a very intense internal debate over the extent to which they want to become involved in a potential conflict over Taiwan. So regardless of who wins the elections in the United States next year, I think the challenges will be the same.
Adriano Bossoni is RAIN's Director of Analysis. RAIN is a risk intelligence company that provides access to critical insights, analysis, and support to its business members. We're speaking over WhatsApp. Adriano, thank you very much for this fascinating conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
And that's going to do it for us this week. Be sure to join us next time on VOA's Issues in the News. Until then, I'm Steve Miller.